President-elect Trump wants to wind down his charitable foundation, but can he? From Marketplace in Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams in for David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. On Christmas Eve, President-elect Donald Trump announced plans to dissolve his charitable foundation. In a statement, Mr. Trump said he wanted to avoid, quote, even the appearance of any conflict with his role as president. Those appearances of conflict have been prominent in his transition. Mr. Trump has complicated business and charitable dealings all over the world. Kyle Chaney is a reporter covering the president-elect for Politico, and he's been following the story over the weekend. Kyle, what prompted this announcement from Mr. Trump?
You know, I think this was about at least ending the appearance of the conflicts of interest that have dogged him since he won the election. So the foundation has been, largely by the Washington Post, been sort of portrayed as non-charitable, kind of used for his own pet purposes, and it's unclear how much charity is actually done and whether it's even involved his own money. So it's been a big point, a sore point for him.
And so he announced over the weekend he was going to dissolve his charitable foundation, but there's a complication from the New York Attorney General's office. Can you explain sort of what that issue is?
Yes, well, he and the Attorney General of New York have not been friends for a long time, but the Attorney General picked up on some of this reporting that's been done by the Washington Post about whether Trump's foundation was even being used for charitable purposes and said, you can't shutter your foundation while I'm still investigating you. So that may complicate his plan to close this thing quickly and quietly.
And what does this say to us about the president-elect's response to these broader calls to wind down his business interests and any of these other potential conflicts of interest?
Well, it shows he at least knows he needs to do something in a nod toward that. It's the unprecedented situation to have someone with as many business ties and relationships become the president. And I think this is the first time he's really grappled with that in a serious way.
Kyle Chaney covers Trump for Politico, and he's been following this story. Thanks so much, Kyle.
Glad to be here. Thanks, Kimberly.
And here at Marketplace, we've created a guide to President-elect Trump's cabinet picks and their links to the business world. It's at trumpcabinet.org. And a telltale sign of the day after Christmas, a giant pile of torn and crumpled holiday wrapping paper. Unless you open your gifts very carefully, all that paper has to go somewhere. You might think the recycling bin is the best place for it, but turns out it's not that simple. Emily Siner from WPLN in Nashville takes a look at the recycled paper market and used gift wrap.
When you recycle a piece of paper, a collector picks it up, bundles it with a lot more, and sells it to a paper mill by the ton. So when Americans spend more than $7 billion on wrapping paper each year, with much of that torn off gifts during the holiday season, you might think the influx of supply would drive the price down. Not so, says Michael Hoffman with Stifel Financial.
It'd take an awful lot of Christmas paper. You won't impact the weight enough to have altered the volume in the marketplace. Just too lightweight.
About 70% of recycled paper comes from cardboard. Wrapping paper is only a small fraction, and it's thin and inky, hard to process. Bill Moore is a paper recycling consultant.
The ink diminishes the yield. It creates extra sludge. When you process it, it requires additional chemicals.
Moore is an avid recycler, but wrapping paper?
I throw it away.
Really?
I might use it to start my fire.
And forget about gift wrap made with foil or plastic. Most recyclers won't take it. In Nashville, I'm Emily Siner for Marketplace.
Now, if politics is really about apportioning resources, that is to say, who gets the money, there's a lot of change coming this next year. Help us explain, explore, and elucidate these stories as only my crew here at Marketplace can. I'm here to ask you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Marketplace today. Help us keep it coming to you. It would be especially helpful to us if you donate at marketplace.org by December 31st.
Some in the travel industry are starting to take note of a growing business opportunity, Muslim-friendly tourism. They're catering to special dietary needs and offering other accommodations for guests who are practicing Muslims. John Lorenzen reports on the services offered by one business in the western French city of Angers.
In a room with a four-poster bed in her 18th-century chateau outside Angers, Iman Azouzi sets a prayer mat down in the direction of Mecca. She has guests tonight at her halal B&B.
L'idée, effectivement, elle m'est venue parce que I got the idea when, a few years ago, a family was turned away from a bed and breakfast place because the mother was wearing a hijab.
The guest is a young computer engineer called Mounir Ouziz. His wife and children are arriving later. Their experience of non-halal tourism has been so-so.
It can be difficult at mealtimes. When it's not halal, you can only eat fish. There's nothing wrong with fish, but it's nice to eat a little meat from time to time. We were never aggressed because of my wife's hijab, but people do look at you in a funny way, which is difficult sometimes.
An animated film on a website called MuslimTrip.fr, where a female black silhouette says to a male black silhouette, "Essayons on faisait un Muslim trip, chérie. Why don't we go on a Muslim trip, darling?" There are lots of sites like this: Voyage Halal, Tourisme Islamique, Travel Muz, Halal Booking. Most offer segregated bathing and spa facilities for women. New York-based Dinar Standard, a consultancy specialised in Islamic markets, says world halal tourism is increasing 8% a year and now represents 12% of world tourism. Back at his Chateau B&B, I asked Mounir if the rise of halal tourism will separate Muslims even more from non-Muslims. Not here, he says, where they often have non-Muslim guests too.
Les musulmans sont traités de la même manière que les autres. Voilà, c'est ce qu'on recherche.
It's good to be Muslim-friendly, he says, not Muslim-only. In Angers, France, I'm John Lawrenson for Marketplace.
In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams with the Marketplace Midday Update. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.